This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark and Wong Xiaoning. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Wednesday the 26th of February, and we have hit the halfway mark on yet another week. How are we today, Xiaoning?
Well, it's good that we made it through the half of the week, because the first 2 days was, I guess, an amazing time to be a Malaysian, just to catch up with all the news unfolding almost by the hour in the political front.
By the hour, by the minute, it felt like at some point.
Yeah, I mean, from Sunday evening until today, it's really been nonstop. Even at night, you get all these like messages coming on that, you know, there's this PC, there's that PC.
Yeah, I'm getting used to waking up to about 300 WhatsApp messages on my phone every morning, because here on The Morning Run, we sleep early, right? Or we try to. Even if you go to bed by about 9 o'clock, generally, there are still things happening all the way up until midnight, 1 a.m. So you do get these random updates throughout the night.
Yeah, it's exciting times for us as Malaysians. I don't know whether worrying too, but definitely exciting times.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether exciting is the way to describe it, unless you're talking about that I think it's an old Chinese curse, you know, may you live in interesting times.
Yeah. This definitely counts as it. But you know, It's also maybe the pains of being, I would say, a relatively young democracy and we finding our way. It's just I hope we get to the right path.
I think that's a very valid thing to hope for indeed at this point. And we are going to be talking about this later on throughout the morning, bringing you updates as we get them. What else do we have, though, in the 6 o'clock hour?
We talk about robots. Interesting during these times,
Are they taking
right?
over the world?
Sometimes I think they are, and for the good for some jobs, but maybe not so for other jobs. So the question is, how do we make sure that some employees don't become like robots?
All right. And if you want to weigh in on these conversations that we're having this morning, do WhatsApp us at 01878988899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, though, we're talking about some self-care habits that perhaps you should look at developing in your workplace. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was One Headlight by The Wallflowers, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin and Xiaoning. Now, when you're at work, generally, that, you know, in order to have a successful, I think, work-life balance kind of enjoyment of your workplace, there is a certain amount of, I think, boundaries that need to be set, right? And Xiaoning is already shaking her head at me as I talk about this. Why is that, Xiaoning? Is it because you don't believe work-life balance exists?
Yes, there's no such thing. I'm sorry if I sound like such a Grinch. There really is no such thing. I think it's something you strive for. I'm not saying you don't want it, mm-hmm. okay, or you don't hope for it, but it will never be the ratio that it should be.
Not in an Asian country, I don't think. Not within the next 10 years.
I'm not even sure it exists universally, whether it's an Asian thing or whether it's a Western thing. I think it varies from person to person. Mm. I would say that. For me, I put my hand up. I've worked for, 20 years, 20 plus years. Hoping to work for another at least 10, 15 years, 20 years. I don't know. I don't think I'll ever achieve it. And I think that's because it's the personality within me.
Yeah, I think that definitely does play into it. But for the most part, you know, in order to avoid burning out at work, there are a number of things that you need to do. And Fast Company has a list of 7 self-care habits that they say you should develop at work in order to try and avoid burnout as long as possible. Because what is it that you say, Xiaoning? It's a slow burn, not a fast one?
Yeah, slow burn, slow burn, guys. We're here for the marathon, okay? Not for the sprint.
Yeah, so this list, I mean, I look through this list and it does make sense. You know, it's things like learning to say no and being aware of your stresses. And I think actually being aware of your stresses is a big thing, because stress is part of work. But to some extent, a lot of people do work well under some amount of stress.
Yeah.
But it's at what point is that stress too much that you become less productive as a result?
Yeah. I mean, there does come to some point where you actually literally fall off the cliff. You know, the danger about it is that you're not even sure that you're at the cliff point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And before you know it, you've fallen off. So I think part of that working experience or with time, you do recognize some of the, I would say, almost stress points or indicators where things aren't happening optimally and you need to be alert, because stress is invisible. That's the worst thing. It's not like a high blood pressure reading. It's not like a sugar level reading, you know, or like something you can actually get a result from a blood test, for example. And I think especially for some people like me, I also recognize it. I suck it up. I would never admit it, you see. And that's the danger.
And it is a danger, because if you don't admit it or you don't acknowledge that that your stress level is rising, other people, chances are, have their own work, have their own stresses, so they are not going to be able to recognize it in you. And I tend to identify with this quite a lot, mostly because I'm very much the same. You know, I also don't like to ask for help, which is another item on this list, because there is a part of me that always feels like, no, you know, if I ask for help, it's admitting that I can't do this, which means admitting defeat. And that's actually not a very healthy way to look at things, because in the longer term, if you take everything onto yourself, it just means that you are going to have less bandwidth, less focus to give to your tasks. And it's going to mean that in some cases, those tasks are not going to be done as well as they could be, because you just refuse to admit that you needed the help.
Yeah, I think that's one very important thing. Like this morning, I asked you for some help with one of the breakfast grills, because I was like, oh, that's just way too much. So, you know, so for me, yes, that's a big step, because in the past, I would have never handed it over. But when I look at the number of hours in the day and, you know, with all this news going on, there's only so much I can do. I think the other important thing in this article, which is useful for me, is go easy on yourself when things don't work out as planned. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important, because we always tend to be our biggest critics, right? You know, we set a bar sometimes so high that it's almost impossible to reach. And then when we don't get there, we just blame ourselves all the time. And then it makes us feel even more stressed and sometimes unworthy, you know, which is the worst thing. Your self-confidence takes a hit.
I mean, I feel like to a certain extent, most people suffer from some form of imposter syndrome, right? So taking criticism is hard. But at the end of the day, I've always embraced the how to go about it is, you know, you make a mistake, you apologize, you say, what can I do better next time? And you move on.
Yeah.
And because that's really all that you can do.
Exactly. And sometimes we should recognize that we tried our best, right? We tried our best. This is the best product that we can put up for that moment. And then we just accept it, you know? So it's like, sometimes that's it, you know? Pat yourself on the back. Don't always be the most critical. But there are always things to be learned, which is fine, you know? And, you know, the other thing that's not in here, which I would add, the eighth item, is that if you have a great team, the stress that you have is much, you can accept it more. And this is something, teamwork does play a role.
Co-workers and your surroundings actually do play a big role. And this list does touch on it in the negative sense, because one of the items here is protecting your energy. Which
so means you're bad team workers, is it?
No, yeah, because you know, we all know that person who, you know, maybe they don't realize it, maybe they're just feeling a lot of stress. Yes, so the term that they use in this article is the energy vampire. So if you know that this person is going to have a lot of negativity, is going to possibly pull your own mood down and affect the rest of your day, maybe just minimize the contact that you have while you do need to actually do that work, right? So that, I thought that was an interesting item on this list as well. But do let us know what you think. What are the self-care habits that you practice at work? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up for you, and then we're taking a look at targets and whether or not rigid targets help or hinder an organisation. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Wait Up, Boots of Danger by Tokyo Police Club, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Shanning. Now, we've seen cases where, you know, in companies, particularly large corporates, there sometimes is the drive to maximize productivity to the extent that you set really very rigid KPIs or targets. And The question is, of course, always whether or not these very rigid targets actually work to increase productivity, or whether you are just inciting your workforce to hit those targets kind of at the expense of everything else. Because we've seen cases like, you know, Wells Fargo, for example, that I think had underwent that fake accounts scandal. They insisted that employees sell 8 products to every customer, and as a result, employees either
made it up, right?
Made it up, you know, just kind of tacked those products onto customers' portfolios without them noticing, or created fake accounts to do them. So the Financial Times asks the question of, if we treat workers like robots, will they start to behave like them? And I think this is an interesting conversation to have, particularly since we are in the age of, at the same time you have this drive for productivity, but also you're talking about things like work-life balance and making sure that, which Shanning doesn't believe in.
No, because companies essentially maximize shareholder value. Maximizing shareholder value means reducing costs to as low as possible so that your profit is the maximum, right? That's the logic of any capitalist business. So as a result of this, what if you're a boss, just imagine, what do you want your workers to do? You want your workers to have maximum output. Right? That's the logic of, isn't it? So actually, unfortunately, in today's technology, with availability of data, AI, Internet of Things, you can then probably enforce this a little bit more. I mean, let's face it, during the Industrial Revolution, they just treated you like slaves. You worked 18, 19 hours a day. You know, you were kept on the factory line to work, to produce
regardless of your age.
Yeah, you could have been 8 and they didn't care, right? Okay, fast forward to 2020. Guess what? We're still on that factory line. It's just a different kind of line, in a nicer office, maybe in a co-working space, maybe in an open plan office. But it's the same. So companies operate on the same ideology. Things haven't changed that much, sadly.
Yeah, I think the awareness that has changed is just, how do you ensure that maximum productivity in the long term? Right. And I think the key here is in the long term, because in the short term, yes, you know, you make your employees work 20 hours a day, probably for like a week, you will get that increase in output.
Yeah, they will just burn out and die, right?
Yes, or quit on the spot, right? So that's where the awareness has started to shift. And but at the same time, it clearly hasn't shifted all that much, because, you know, what this article in the FT highlights is an incident that happened at Barclays, where they instituted surveillance and monitoring technology on employee computers to ensure that, you know, they didn't take unnecessary breaks, you know, they didn't do anything kind of that would impact productivity. But the question was, you know, how do you judge whether something is helping or hindering productivity? How does one person do that? Because a water cooler conversation, for example, on the surface of it doesn't look like it's contributing to productivity. But it could be that at that water cooler, you are, you know, throwing back and forth ideas on how to solve a problem that you're currently facing in your workload.
Yeah, I think it's hard to measure. That's why, you know, we try to measure every single thing, because it's all about, nowadays, you know, every company runs things on this concept of cost center. Productivity per hour, you know, per hour, profit per employee. Everybody tries to quantify everything. And it's the common practice.
Per employee?
Yes, profit per employee is very common nowadays. Yes. Don't give me that dirty look, Lin Mark.
I'm not giving you a dirty look.
It's quite often the case, which is why for some investment banks, they have this great reluctance to hire anybody, because if you hire people, then that ratio comes down. So what you do is you then try to quantify, and hence this zealousness to kind of have surveillance on you, to kind of make sure that, hey, you sell 8 products, you work at your PCs for 20 minutes at a time, you're only allowed 4 breaks per day. Yeah, they try to do that because everybody tries to quantify profit per employee, and that's the problem.
And I don't agree with this, because, you know, at the end of the day, human beings are social creatures, and we are not robots, and we are not meant to be, you know, shackled to our desks with only, you know, four 10 minute breaks allowed every workday.
They try. It doesn't stop employers, right? Employers, sorry.
Yeah, I know they do try, but at the end of the day, you know, at what cost is your workforce actually that much more productive because of these measures?
No, and more scarily, when it is enforced, does it make your employers do things that ethically they weren't supposed to do, or even legally they weren't supposed to do in the first place?
Yes, in the case of Wells Fargo is a good one because you know, the targets there were so rigid that employees couldn't meet them, but were too afraid to say that they couldn't meet them. So they found other ways to beef up their results.
Exactly. So there's a limit to this.
So the question here is, of course, you know, do these sort of rigid targets help or hinder an organization? Let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are about to head into the 6:30 news bulletin with Li Xinying. But first, here is I Melt With You by Modern English, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was You're the One by Tracy Chapman, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark and Wang Xiaoning. Now, yesterday, I happened to be looking at the Guardian website, and I noticed a very familiar name or a very familiar face in the news articles of the Guardian, because they've written a primer on Malaysia's political turmoil. So everything that someone would need to know about what's happening here in this country.
And 101.
A bit of a 101, yes. Yeah. So it's a good primer, I think. It goes through, you know, what's happening currently, a little bit about the history between Tun Mahathir and Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim. But the thing that struck me most about this article was that there are a lot of superlatives in this. So, you know, this is... we have the world's oldest democratically elected prime minister. We also have the one of the largest financial scandals in the world, and it makes me a little bit sad to think that this is how Malaysia is thought of on the international stage. You know, oldest democratically elected leader is one thing, but we have first we had in more recent history we had one MDB, and now
world's biggest. I think that was the word used in The Guardian. World's biggest financial fraud.
Mm, yes. And now we have this situation, which first in history, where our government has basically imploded.
Yeah. So, sadly, known for all the wrong things, right?
Yeah. We've also been on Bloomberg and Reuters, I noticed.
Yeah, well, it is, like I say, we live in amazing times at this moment. So not surprising the foreign press are picking up these stories. And usually they ignore us. I think, you know, that's the reality. We don't feature so much in terms of global news.
We're not exactly the kind of country that moves the needle in most cases.
No, and the last few weeks, I think a lot of the news has been, of course, on the COVID-19, the mm-hmm. breakout in Wuhan, you know, sadly, the death numbers, the number of infections that has really taken over headlines. But even prior to that, we weren't featured very much. And so maybe this is something, yeah, that the foreign press were like, oh, exciting news for a change on Malaysia.
It means the Southeast Asian correspondents or the Malaysian correspondents now have work to do.
Yeah, something exciting to write home, you know, so that they can file these stories and it will get featured.
Yeah, but I guess it's also of interest to people because there is so much uncertainty surrounding, you know, what's actually going to happen as a result of this, because no one quite knows yet, you know, who is going to be the next leader of the country? What is the political landscape going to look like? You know, we were talking this morning, just before the show, about who constitutes opposition nowadays. Nobody knows, because all the political alliances are in flux.
Yeah, I mean, we were trying to do the maths, right? That we know there's 222 seats in parliament, and how could the, you know, each coalition look like? Who's in which camp? Camp A, Camp B, and I think the buzzword for this week, or the word of the week, is fluid.
I agree. Because I think there has been some coverage as well over the Yang di-Pertuan Agong's decision to meet all of the 222 MPs to determine who would be the best leader and who has the most support. And
The meetings continue today.
The meetings continue today. And from the comments that I've seen on social media, a lot of the sentiment does seem to be, yeah, great idea. But, you know, by the time the meetings conclude, you know, who knows, maybe the MPs that he's already interviewed have changed their minds.
That is true. But, you know, let's hope there's some resolution to it. But in the meantime, did you notice that our king very kindly sent out lunch to the reporters who have been following the story outside Istana Negara?
For the second day in a row.
Yeah. I mean, on the first day, I think they had KFC, right? Mm-hmm. They had Kentucky Fried Chicken. And on the second day, he came out himself without a jacket. Well, you know, I noticed that. And then a tie and a shirt to hand out McDonald's to all the reporters. I mean, that is actually a really nice gesture. But I think the bet in the office today is, will there be lunch served? And what will it be today?
Will it be Pizza Hut? Will it be Domino's? Which other fast food chain will we see?
Or maybe our own homemade Ramly Burgers. Who knows? But, you know, yes, I think the reporters probably really appreciated the lunch because, you know, everyone who is in the media outlet has been working nonstop since Sunday afternoon to catch up on all the many, many stories out there.
I feel like, so we run a poll every morning, right, on the BFM Twitter account. I feel like the question of what food should be served maybe should be the next poll that we run. Will it be Ramly Burgers? But yeah, I do agree because this is, you know, this is one of the things that I have seen criticism of the coverage of this political turmoil. And on the one hand, I understand, you know, the frustration that comes out of reading all of these very different headlines and getting, you know, progressively more confused. But for me, I'm also sympathetic towards the media as a member of the media, because a lot of the times, you know, as a journalist, your job is to try and figure it out so that you can communicate it well to your listenership or your readership. And that's not always an easy task. So I also do have a lot of sympathy for those who have been camping outside Istana Negara to try and spot cars, you know, for those who've been, you know, working round the clock, you know, until the early hours of the morning, trying to ensure that, you know, the printing, that everything goes out as planned.
Yeah, it is. It's been challenging, but yet, like I say, interesting times.
Indeed. Well, do let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got some messages coming up for you. And then after that, we're taking a look at what you've been saying on social media. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Hang Loose by Alabama Shakes. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Xiaoning. Now, thank you very much for your messages this morning. We've had a couple of tweets and WhatsApps. Ro has WhatsApped in. What's he said? Shunning.
Conversations at the water cooler are usually about how spicy the nasi lemak was, which in turn brings employees closer to, and thus increase productivity. Yeah, I guess it makes you a little bit more chummy, and then you get to know each other better, and then you improve teamwork.
Yeah, because, you know, if you have bonded over the spice levels in the nasi lemak sambal, you feel a little bit less worried about maybe approaching them for actual help doing your work or resolving an issue with your workload. Salma has also WhatsApped in to say that the generosity of the king is wonderful, but maybe he can consider serving salad if he believes in a healthy rakyat. Yeah, because you know, fast foods perhaps not the
what do you call it, a poke bowl?
Yeah, not a poke bowl is probably
another
good
option too.
maybe a little bit more perishable, considering I think there's that burger in Iceland. I think there's a cheeseburger in Iceland that's been around since 2009.
But yeah, nice gesture nonetheless.
Of course. And we are also taking a look at the front pages of the papers this morning. Unsurprisingly, they are mostly about the political turmoil that we're seeing in the country. The Star has gone with parties want snap polls. So Barisan Nasional and PAS, which make up the biggest blocks of MPs in Parliament, are calling for snap elections. And of course, the Star's front page still has gone with an image of the Prime Minister, or the interim Prime Minister now, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, at his desk, just another day at work.
In his grey safari suit, right?
Yes.
His signature grey safari suit. Okay, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to look at some of the news portal website headlines. And on Malaysia Insight, the headline is Bersatu Youth Backs Dr. Mahathir as Prime Minister. So Syed Saddi says Armada rejects notion of working with thieving, corrupt UMNO. So it looks like there's a split within the Bersatu mm-hmm. Party. And this is going to be very interesting and very timely because today on the Breakfast Grill, we are having Dato' Rais Husin, who is a strategist at Bersatu, and we're going to find out what's happening there at that party. And it's 26 MPs.
Yeah, I think the Bersatu comments echo some of the ones from UMNO and PAS as well when it comes to the idea of a unity government, because unity governments are usually formed when there is in a time of great crisis, right? So when war breaks out, or when there's some kind of overarching national natural disaster, and because it usually takes something large and external to really get all of these warring parties to work together. I don't really think that the situation in the country right now qualifies as a natural disaster or such a large external factor to actually get all of our parties, who have quite a bitter history with one another, to actually come to the table.
Yeah, well, they sometimes are bedfellows and sometimes they're not. That's life in politics, right? And I'm going to talk about the Singapore Straits Times, which I've been doing for the last few days. Curious to find out what our neighbours think about us. And the headline is, Malaysia's Mahathir Moots grand coalition of fierce foes, but UMNO and PAS decline. And this is written by Shannon Teo, the Malaysian bureau chief. And it's about Dr. Mahathir proposing the idea to Malaysia's main political party leaders on Tuesday morning, before the king actually began the process of interviewing individual MPs. You know, so I guess it's all about the numbers game. Who has enough parties, right, to actually command the majority of the House?
Yeah, so the Harian Metro has gone with an interesting front page as well. So they have 55% Pilih Tun M, because they did a poll. They ran a poll on the on their Twitter account, I think it was yesterday, and got just shy of 8,000 votes. And I think 8,000 votes is definitely something that we aspire to for our own Twitter polls.
Yes.
And 55, they basically asked who would people support when it comes to being the Prime Minister of the country. And 55% of their respondents chose Tun Mahathir, 20% chose Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, 12% voted for Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, while a further just shy of 12% voted for Tengku Razali Hamzah, who's another name that's been thrown into the ring.
Oh, interesting. On the Malaysian Reserve, the headline is mounting support for Dr. M to be PM again. And it's there's a little sidebar here. If all MPs from all parties do not stray from their promises, it says that Dr. Mahathir could receive the backing of more than 150 lower house members, which indicates that he might have the majority.
And The Edge Financial Daily has gone with an editorial, a decision on the front cover, because it goes, the headline is, The Edge says, give the rakyat a break. A unity government is the best hope for Malaysia. So this is an interesting article that's continued on page 4, because it outlines the fact that chief among the dangers that we're facing now is the threat to national unity posed by escalating racial and religious extremism that has started to happen after GE14. So they're saying perhaps a unity government would be the best way forward. Now, that though is all that we have for you from the papers, because we're about to head into our own 7 o'clock news bulletin, and after that we're bringing you the latest in business and current affairs news. So be sure to stay tuned for that after the news. But first, here is Electric Light Orchestra with Hold On Tight, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.